All right, so I think we're on. We started from the top, from the bottom of your bet on a bet last week, and we sort of I think we turned over just. Yeah, but I think we'll go through that again. But just obviously, we'll start off with everyone saw the video of the cow running across the road. Okay, so what do we think? I thought it was good chazara. For me, it was good to to sort of go through it again in my mind. So someone sent me that they said, you know, it depends if it's tam or muad, right? Like we've talked about in the past, that tam is the first three times that an animal does that. So that was sort of my first thought, but I'm not sure that's correct. Right? Does anyone spot the... what would you say? Someone came to you. The cow... Who's liable, firstly?
Cow.
Yeah, presumably. Or the owner, right? The owner is going to be liable for this thing. I was very impressed how it just stopped it there. I mean, shows you cows... Not to be messed with. I mean, just stopped that moped like... You know, that was that. But tam and muad is when the animal gores. So it's when it's sort of like, you know, it's running at something to damage it. I would think that falls more under the category of regel, which is, you know, it's more similar to just as you're walking along. It's sort of like damage that happens as you go on your way, which is what it's more similar to. So in that case, there's no tam muad distinction. The point of the tam muad distinction is that the animal is that it's a surprise, right? A tam is a surprise. Animals are not supposed to, and they didn't sort of go for any of the people around or any of the cars. It wasn't trying to cause damage or anything. The point is when it's trying to cause damage, then that's a tam, because that's unusual, and that's unexpected. But I think that looked more like regel to me, which is, as you say, just as it's wandering around, in that sense, should have been...
It doesn't depend on the velocity more. Of what's going on.
Of the cow?
If you're trampling, it's probably more walking.
Right? But it's not... But the point is, it's a category. No, but the point is, it's a category. Yeah, I mean, they're different categories. There's three different categories. Keren, Shein, and Regel, right? When we're talking in animals. So Keren is basically intentional damage. Shein is when it's gaining benefit from the damage, right? Like it's eating something or whatever, it's using its back. I think we saw the Gemara that talked about, you know, let's say it's using its back to it's using a wall to scratch its back and it breaks the wall as a result of that or something like that. It's using it to benefit itself. And regel is sort of like, you know, accidental damage that happens as it's walking along. So sometimes that's trampling, but in this case it's, I don't know, it's just walking along and it causes the damage by doing that. So I would have thought it falls more under that category, in which case it's going to have the limitations of regel, right, which are to do with... I think that's linked to Rishus and Nizak and things like that. If it's in the property of the damaged and things like that. But in this case, I would have thought it would be regular damages, and they would have to pay for the whole thing. That was my sense. I don't know. Yeah, but it was nice to see it. Yeah, I mean, I wonder who it belonged. The other thing is most likely it probably didn't belong to anyone. Or whatever, it might have been just wandered in from a field or something. I guess it must be onto someone. Yeah, so then I guess it's
wild
cows. I don't know. You get wild horses.
Wild
horses. I don't know. So yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. So I presume must have. What?
So the Swiss have bells around the cows.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Okay. But there was another one I also saw. I don't think it caused any damage, but a cow also stopped the M25 at some point last week or the week before or something. Also wandered off, so there you go. All right. Okay, but we're back in... Yes, you've been on a bet really... I wouldn't say nothing to do with damages, but obviously we're focusing on this very specific point of our mission, and nechasim she'ein bahim me'ila, objects which are not subject to the me'ila penalty, benefiting, you know, misusing holy objects, put simply, and the Gemara had inferred from that the fact that it's talking about nechasim she'ein bahen me'ila is specifically those which are liable to the me'ila penalty. But delesbehu ha mikdash kodshi, right? But they can be holy objects, i.e. there are holy objects that might well be subject to damages, to damages payments, but... And they are so because they're not subject to Ma'ila. And so we spent time trying to sort of suggest that this is based on the opinion of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who says that certain karbanot, right, certain sacrifices, specifically kodshim kalim, are the property of the owner, the property of the of the person who actually brought them, and therefore those would be subject to the they're not subject to the penalty of Me'ilah, and therefore they are also subject to damages payments. So we had a few different I think we sort of had a few different challenges with that. So let's the first interesting side question, I think, David, you left off. What were you wondering about? Kochim. We talked about kochim, whether there were there are kochim, right? Double holy, for lack of a better translation. And kochim kalim. And we said kochim kalim are often eaten by the, not in all cases, but are often eaten by the owners. And we wondered whether kochim are ever eaten by the owners. And I don't believe they are. So I did look it up. There's actually a great, you find this stuff. I mean, I'm sure you can find all sorts of things. But on the I don't know if this is, I think it's regular Wikipedia, but like the Hebrew version of Wikipedia, not all articles are in all languages. So the Hebrew Wikipedia has a whole article on kochim kalim, very interestingly. So it talks about the different ones, and obviously we know. Right, kochim kalim, as we referenced last time, I think David also pointed out that, again, we talk about this in Ezehu Mekomon, right, which we say in the morning, talks about the different place in which the Shechita takes place. Again, similarly, the all the kochim kalim are either eaten by the Kohanim or not eaten at all. So, for instance, an Ola is not eaten at all, right? An Ola is offered up entirely, burnt offering, right? Burnt entirely on the altar, although the skin does go to the, or the hide, probably should say, goes, that does belong to the Kohanim. So again, different types of things, and kochim kalim specifically is going to be for Kohanim and not to do with the owner, whereas kochim kalim will be eaten by the owner, and therefore the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili is since they're eating it, but again, linked to that is the fact that that in a sense it is viewed in halacha to belong to them, and therefore would be subject to the to payment of damages, right? Would be subject to this damages payment. Now, I was going to say one more thing. Now I can't remember. Okay, all right. Let's go. Let's move on. So we were where? Gufa. Oh, okay. So we're coming back to Gufa. Okay, so Gufa is coming back to this verse that we had quoted earlier in the name of. That wasn't Rabbi Yossi Aglili, was it? Where is that? Umal Amal. Where is that? So that's back on Yud Bet Amud Bet. We had this verse. Why can't I find it now? Yeah, where is it? 10 lines from the top. Oh, it's much higher. That's why. So I was looking much higher. Oh, yeah, so it is. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. So that was the source for Rabbi Yossi Haglili, for Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion. Umala ma'al ba'ashem, l'rabos kochim kalim shehin mamone. Right? That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. So he had based that on that verse, umala ma'al ba'ashem, literally referring to the me'ila payment, right? To the fact that when you misuse, misappropriate holy objects, then that's obviously forbidden. There is a penalty for that, and I think last time we also distinguished a little bit between different types of benefits, right? Different types of benefit, because we had this later. Yeah, we had later on on Yud Bet Amud Bet the fact that you can use sometimes you can use this according to everybody. Mekachin Bo'ez Aisha, you can use that to marry somebody, right? So it seems to be that benefit, even according to those who say there is, you're not allowed to gain benefit, seems to be permitted. So again, there are sort of different types of what we call isurei hana'ah, different types of prohibitions when it comes to benefiting from things. Some things are out of bounds entirely, right? And when it comes to kochim, so for instance, basar b'cholov, right? So meat and milk mixed together, specifically cooked together, you're not allowed to gain any benefit from, right? Or yayin nesech, right? So wine that's used for non-Jewish sacramental purposes, right? Those sorts of things. Is again, you're not allowed to gain any benefit from it at all. And therefore, That's a sort of a blanket prohibition on all types of benefit, whereas kodshim is a slightly different thing. Kodshim is not a blanket prohibition on benefiting, but it's a question of misuse, right, and misappropriation. And yes, it can also apply to taking. So in a sense, it's not that kodshim are prohibited from benefit because they have that, you know, because they've sort of been given this stamp of you're not allowed to use it. It's because it belongs to someone else. Who does it belong to? It belongs to God, right? And therefore, you can only use it in a sense in the way it's expected to use. Just like I can't use something that belongs to you in a way that would be inappropriate, right? So it's a slightly different thing. Therefore, you, in a sense, you can sometimes gain benefit from it if it's a sort of an incidental benefit or a sort of a side benefit, and therefore it's slightly different. Okay, but anyway, coming back to our verse. So Gufa. Huma'ala ma'al ba'Hashem le'rabos kodshim kanim. That was the opinion. Shehim amona divir Rabbi Yosi Aglili. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Ben Azai Omer. Ben Azai is of a different opinion. Ben Azai Omer le'rabos is a shlomim. Okay, so shlomim is actually really a one of the kodshim kanim. That is a subcategory of kodshim kanim. So he is of the opinion that that is what it's coming to include in that case, right? So it's not all kodshim kanim; it's only the shlomim, right? Lemiyute mai, what is this excluding? Ilemo, i.e., what is Ben Azai? You know, which of the kodshim kanim is he not subscribing to, right? Does this not apply to? Lemiyute ilemo lemiyute bechor, right? If we're saying that he, oh no, have I skipped some? Rabbi says shalom. Excuse me. So the rabbi says shalom. Abba Yosi ben Tostoi Omer. Sorry, we've got to this. First opinion. Abba Yosi ben Tostoi suggests that Lo Omar ben Azai, when Ben Azai says that it's only referring to the Shlomim, Elo bibechor bilvat, right? They're only talking about a bechor, right? That is the only type of kodshim kalim, which is prohibited, which basically falls under this category of being considered momon ba'alim. Momon ba'alim. Right. Ben Azai, Omar Mar, Ben Azai Omer, Lo Rabos Es Ashlomim. So we come back to this. Come back to our original statement. Ben Azai says that this verse is coming to include Shlomim, all Shlomim, as a more general category. Lemiyote mai, what is it excluding then, right? I.e., out of the kodshim kalim category, what is it excluding? Ilema lemiyote bechor, right? If Abba Yossi ben Dostoy had suggested, it is excluding a bechor, right? I.e., a firstborn animal. This guy we're talking about a firstborn animal. Hashta umash lomim sheteunim smicha unuchosim utenufas chose veshok. Omras momen ba'alim hu. We'll go through each of these slowly in just a moment, but just to sort of get a sense of the flow of the Gemara. Umash shlomim, when we talk about all shlomim generally, they require a few things. They require smicha, we'll have to go through again. Smicha, nesachim, tenufas chazev ashok. Okay, they require each of those. Omras momen ba'alim, and yet they are considered to be the property of the owner. Bechor miboy, right? Surely it's almost like a kal v'chomer. It's not quite a kal v'chomer. I don't want to use that phrase, but it's basically sounding like the fact that there are elements of a shlomim which despite all of these things, it is still considered to be the property of the owner, and therefore bechor should be all the more so. Okay, so we have to let's just break this down and go through each of these elements, sort of fill in some of the background so we can understand each of the elements on their own. Okay, so smicha. Smicha is, smicha literally means, what do we call smicha? Smicha that nowadays that we refer to as a smicha is is usually what we think of it when we talk about the rabbinate. Okay, so number one, it's not real smicha. Real smicha was, all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have that quite anymore because we don't have that unbroken chain. But the idea of smicha came from one specific part of it, which is that, and it comes, we see it at the end of the Torah, where God commands Moshe to place his hands on Yehoshua's head, right? And he puts his hands on his head. So that's where the word smicha comes from. It literally means to lean your hands on the person's head. So there is also a mitzvah to do that with certain korbanot, right? With certain sacrifices as well. That before the animal is sacrificed, you put your hands on the animal's head, and very often you'll say something, right? Very often you'll say something, specifically with like a korban chatos or something like that, where you're bringing a sin offering. You'll do vidui while you're sort of putting your hands on the animal's head. You have to lean on it. So again, that's basically all of that's like a little bit of background. Again, smicha is obviously a big topic, but just to give a little bit of background. So that's something which is required when it comes to a shlomim. Okay, that's required when it comes to a shlomim. So unasachim, and what else? So nasachim are nasachim literally means pouring. Okay, so nasachim are basically wine. I think the word is libations, right? Basically, where you pour the wine together with the korban. So again, it requires them together with this sacrifice. And tenufas, chozeh, v'shok. Again, different sacrifices have different requirements. So this one particularly has. Tenufa literally means to wave, right? Tenufa means to wave. The chozeh and the shok are the chest. Is it? I thought the shok is the thigh. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought the chozeh is the chest and the shok is the thigh, right? Although yerech is really a thigh. So what's a shok? Maybe it's calf. Maybe it's lower down. It's the part of a leg. Oh, that's the chozeh is the breast. Foreleg. Hind leg. Yeah, foreleg. Yeah, fine. Hind leg. Okay. So whichever one it is, but I thought it was the, I think it's the lower leg. I think it's the calf rather than the yerech, but I might be wrong. Maybe we don't distinguish. Either way, so it's definitely a leg of the animal. It's a leg of the animal. In fact, I think it must be the hind leg because I think the zeroa is the foreleg, i.e., what we call an arm, right? An arm is often the right. That's the foreleg of the animal. Either way, that's the point is that when it comes to the matnos kahuna, right? Then the specific gifts that are given to the Kohen, part of the 24 different gifts that are given to the Kohen, one of them is a bechor, right? Is the firstborn animal. Is a firstborn animal, which... Did we talk about a firstborn animal briefly last time? Yeah, we did. Okay, yeah, we did. That's what I thought. Tam v'chai. So firstborn animal, which has to be... Oh, yes, we did talk about it last time, because we had this whole thing about chutz la'aretz, right? About coming from outside of Israel or inside of Israel, and the Gemara distinguishing on that front. And obviously, the other significant distinction, very important distinction with the bechor, is the fact that it's only brought as a... It's only brought as a sacrifice when it's unblemished. Okay, so there are many prohibitions. Basically, there are sort of many things that are when you yourself, let's say you're a farmer, you're raising animals. So the firstborn animal, right, has to go to the Kohen. If it gains a blemish, right, then it no longer has to go to the Kohen, right? Then it can be redeemed, right? Basically, or it becomes no longer usable as this gift to the Kohen, and therefore there are prohibitions to avoid people doing that, right? To avoid people doing that, because otherwise you just sort of cause a blemish in the animal, and therefore suddenly it's yours as opposed to the Kohen's, which obviously would be. Problematic, or it sort of changes.
Is it the firstborn of the third of that calving season, or is it the firstborn of every?
I think it's each animal. It's a good question. I'm assuming it's the one of each animal. Yeah, firstborn is a firstborn.
That's a lot of animals potentially. You've got a big herd then.
Right. 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 But again, not all of them will be. Yeah, Bechor is a firstborn. Yeah, so that's the problem. So that's the problem. So that's why there are a number of. Yeah. Again, you can redeem. You can redeem. There are some things you can redeem and some things you can't redeem. Sorry?
Because if you set aside under the 10th.
I'm not sure you can redeem them, actually. I think there's a verse that says another.
Born during the preceding year. I don't know. I would have thought if it was the firstborn of every animal and then you still got a tithe.
Yeah, but sorry, don't forget, it's not the firstborn of every animal of every season. It's the firstborn of every animal once. I mean, let's say you have a, I don't know, whatever it is, 100 cows. Let's say 20 cows. Okay, 20 cows who are giving birth. They're not all giving birth for the first time.
Correct.
Right? So that's, so again, so most years you're not going to be, there's not going to be a problem of b'chor. Yeah, not problem of b'chor, a mitzvah of b'chor. Right, so there's yes, so but and again we'll come back to Ma'aseh Behemah in just a moment. Actually, you mentioned about tithing. Tithing is also going to be another one, which we'll come back to in just a moment. So there was something else I wanted to go back over, which I can't remember. Okay, so anyway, but back to our. Back to the flow of our Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara basically, as we said, started off trying to understand this verse. So according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, this verse was including Kodshim Kalim, right? According to Ben Azai, it was only including Shlomim, right? They are considered to be Momon Ba'alim, the property of the owner. And then we said... and then we had this explanation that we said when we were explaining Va'omer lo Omar ben Azai Elo Bibachor Bilvat. So he is only referring to he said he's sort of limiting it even further. He's limiting it even further, right? That we're saying that it's not just any shlamim, but it's only b'chor specifically, which is a type of shlamim. Why is b'chor considered to be momon ba'alim as opposed to anything else? So that we haven't got to. But before we get to why it should be, we're already suggesting why it shouldn't be. And the reason it shouldn't be is we're saying, well, if another Rabbi Zashlamim, Lemiyote Mai, right? Ilimo Lemiyote Bechor. So, Hashta Ma Shlomim Shetunim Smicha Unchosim Utunufas Chosav Ashok Omras Momon Baalim. Who, right? If something which requires all of those things is still considered to be, right? All of those things make it sound like they are even more linked to the Kohanim, right? Those types of things. Or linked to Kodshim Kalim, you know, something that shouldn't belong to the owners themselves. So Bechor Miboy, right? And Rashi clarifies Ubi Bechor Bechutzal Oretz Kama. We're specifically talking about a firstborn animal outside of the land of Israel. Kiven de lav lahakrova koi, because it's not fit for bringing as a korban, right? You're not supposed to send it over to the Beis HaMikdash to do that. Lo zochule mishulchan gavoa to lechozi legava, right? I think this is again something we talked about last time. The fact that if we're talking about outside of the land of Israel, then since it's not really going to be offered up, so therefore there's a much more sort of stronger hold of the owners on this animal, as opposed to if it's in the land of Israel, in which case the expectation is to send it off to the temple. Okay, and again I think even in that case it still needs to be redeemed, right? But the point is you're not going to offer it up. Usually there's a prohibition against redeeming it, but I think in the should double check essentially. So we're writing down we get all these questions as we come along. So when we talk about a bechor outside of Israel, what actually happens to it? So usually the verse says Lo Sifdeh, which I think we're going to come across soon, but outside of Israel, then potentially yes, redeemed. So let's see if we can figure that out, that specific point out as we go through. All right. So we've left off again. We've left off suggesting that Bechor should be included, right? It's not such a good... We're not convinced of this suggestion that Bechor is the specific sort of category that we're taking out over here. Ela Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan sees it differently, and says Lemiyute Ma'aser, right? To exclude Ma'aser, specifically coming to remove that category. What's Ma'aser? So again, not talking about Ma'aser of fruits or vegetables or grain or anything like that. Specifically Ma'aser Behema we're talking about now. Okay, we're talking about animals, in the realm of animals. I.e., what is Ma'aser Behema? How do you fulfill that commandment? So you have a herd, as I said before, you have a herd, and one of every 10, right, you have to give away. So if you have, I don't know, whatever it is, 20 animals that are born that year, so two of them have to be given away, just as we do that in everything, right? So many say that nowadays with our earnings, it may be only rabbinic, or maybe a minhag, or maybe a Torah commandment. One or the other is a bit of a debate, but again, similarly, there is you have to give ma'aser of earnings, of fruit, of vegetables, and now we're specifically talking about of your animals, right? Ma'aser behema. So you have to give ma'aser of your animals. Correct. In addition to the bechor, but the bechor is a separate. As you said, it's once in a lifetime. No. Correct. It's a separate. Separate payment, as it were. Yeah, okay. So he suggests that he's talking about Ma'aser. Why? Kidetanya. Bibuchor ne'emar lo sifdeh, right? So as I mentioned earlier, when it comes to the Bechor, there's a specific prohibition to redeem it, right? So Bechor sifdeh v'nimkar, but it is, let's say you sell it, right? But it can be sold tam chai, right? Ba'al mum chai v'shochut. I.e., if it's unblemished, then it's sold when it's alive, right? But if it's ubal mum chai v'shochut, but if it's blemished, then it's sold when it's alive or even once it's shechted. Why is it not sold once it's shechted if it's a tam? Because then there's a prohibition. We're talking about shochut must be outside of the temple. If we're talking about shochut inside of the temple, where it's shechted inside of the temple, then you've already given it over, right? That's no longer relevant. That's the mitzvah where you've given it and they've shechted it and then it's going to be eaten. Talking about where you choose to do that, or someone does that outside of the temple, and then that's what's called shechutei chutz, i.e., it's been shechted in the wrong place, right? It was something which was, again, this is a misuse, something shouldn't have been done, and then there's a prohibition, then there's a isur hana, a regular prohibition against, on benefit from there. So you can't even sell it, okay? You can't even sell it, you can't use it, can't gain any benefit from it. At all, in that case, okay. So as I said, so we're talking about tam chai, only unblemished when it's alive, or blemished, alive, or shechted already. But ma'aser, right? When it comes to ma'aser, then it says, doesn't say lo sifdeh. It says ne'emar lo yigael ve'ena nimkar lo chai ve'lo shochut lo tam ve'lo ba'al mum. Right? Then it's in a sense you can't redeem it no matter what. Right? You can't redeem it. And again, we're basically we're basically sort of, it's a much more stringent issue over here, and therefore since you can't sell this Ma'aser Behema at all, right, that is not considered to be not considered to be your property. I.e., when it comes to a bechor, right, you have a little bit of leeway, but when it comes to Ma'aseh Behemah, you have no leeway at all, and therefore that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is what is being excluded. That's the category that we're pulling out here from the more general Shlomim, which again is under the bigger subheading of Kodshim Kalim. So Kodshim Kalim is the sort of biggest subheading we have over here. Then underneath that is Shlomim, which is a decent chunk. And then within Shlomim, so Ma'aseh Behemah and Bechor are two different types. And again, differing opinions as to which one we're actually pulling out over here from the broader category.
If it's stored in blemish, therefore presumably not consumable. Why can't you derive benefits? It's one of these things you can't derive any benefit at all.
It shouldn't have been slaughtered. It's what's called shchut echutz. It should have been done in the temple, right? And since it was done outside of the temple, so now it's got this this label, of iser hanah, no benefit. Okay, Ravina masne lea seifa. I think that's what we're up to. And back in. Oh yeah. Lo chai ve lo shochet lo tam ve lo ba'almum. So about just over a third of the way down. Ravina, second word in. Ravina masni le asefa. So Ravina connects this to the end of the statement. I Abba Yosi ben Dostoy Omer lo Omer ben Azai elo bibachor bilvad lemiyute mai ilemo lemiyute shlomim. Right. So he says, what do you mean? He flips around our understanding of this, right? When we're talking about lemiyutei mai, right, what we're excluding, Abba Yossi ben Dostoy, what exactly is his intention, right? Ilema, if we're saying lemiyutei shlomim, that it's shlomim generally that are not considered to be momon ba'alim, i.e. we're taking that out rather than sort of specifying that's what we're talking about. So that's problematic. Hashta umma bechor she kodosh mirechem momonohu shlomim miboy. So before, this is very interesting, because before we had this reason of thinking that bechor is more likely to be belonging to the there are different parts to each of the shlomim, and some of them seem to be more linked to the owners, and some of them don't. So before we had these categories, when we talked about smicha and nesachim and tunufas achaza, right, when you're waving, you have the fact that you have to do those specific actions on that korban made it sound like that was less linked to the owner, and bechor in that sense, because it doesn't have any of those actions, was more linked to the owner. Whereas now we flip that around and we say that in a sense bechor looks less linked to the owner, whereas the other ones look more linked to the owner. How so? Because over here we say umma bechor shekodosh mirechem, right? When we talk about the other types of shlomim, they're not kodosh merechem. Literally means holy from the womb, i.e. from the moment that they're born, right, then a bechor is a bechor. It already has that status. All the other ones don't gain that status until later on, until they're designated as such, right? Let's say the Ma'aseh Behemah. It's not that you don't have to give the 10th one that is born. You don't have to give, let's say you have, you don't have to sort of clock. You yourself separate a 10th, and I think the way they used to, the Mishnah describes that they used to have like a pen, right, and you would, and they would let them out one at a time, and then you would sort of paint every tenth sheep, right? So you are designating, in a sense, one of every 10. And it's not until you designate, just an example, but there are other korbanos as well. The point is, they don't actually gain their holy status, right, their status of kodshim, until it's designated. Whereas bechor gains it from the beginning. So which one sounds like it's connected to the owner? I would say that if you're going to distinguish between any of them, the bechor is the one that sounds less linked to the owner, because you don't even get the choice as to what, you know, it's kodesh merechem. That's what the Gemara is saying. It's holy from the moment that it comes out. Whereas the other ones they don't. So that's the, as I said, I don't want to use the word kal v'chomer because we've used it in two directions here. But that's where we're sort of saying that this, the indication seems to be more towards bechor
having less link to the owner, and therefore if Bechor is going to be linked to the owner, even though it's Kodesh Merechem, so then Shlomim Miboy, right? Do we even need to be told about Shlomim, the rest of the category of Shlomim, being linked to the owner, and therefore Ma'amun Ba'alim, again, all within this realm of Rabbi Yossi, and therefore again should be what we're referring to when we say Nachosim She'ein Bahem Me'ila. Okay,
so yes. Let's say you tie 20 animals, and it's unlikely other things being equal, you're not going to need 20 during their lifetime.
You've tithed 20, i.e. 18 still belong to you, and two of them are going to be given away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can those 18, if you don't need them, can you sell those? Because presumably
you can do whatever you want.
So you can.
The 18 are yours to do whatever you want.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, that's after you've designated
two. Two, exactly, yes. Okay. Right. Yes. Yeah.
And how often is this
annually? Well, animals tend to... I'm not an expert, but I think animals tend to be born annually. I think it's like spring is the season for...
It's linked to when they're born rather than to when...
Correct,
the
temple yeah.
requires.
Correct. Yeah, you give them. Yeah, you give them when they. Yeah. Meaning, it's up to. It's yeah. You have the requirement to do it, so it's not. You need to do it. You're required to do it when you get it, right? You get it obviously when it's born, right? So you tend to get a chunk.
Tenth of that season's.
Yeah. Exactly. Similar to income. Income. Yeah, or fruit, or income, or something. Yeah, same thing. Yeah. Yes. So, okay. So that's so again. We're now rereading all of this. This is now Ravina Masnil Sefer. Basically, sort of reread this whole thing. So we're going back through all of the opinions and basically flipping them on their head. We're saying what was the category that we were excluding is in a sense the one that we're including. So now coming back to Rav Yochanan, we're going to do the same thing. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan is not saying, he's saying Lemiyute Maaser, right? Kidatanya, and again he brings this proof from the Brisa. Bibuchor Ne'emar Losifte. So with the Bukhar it says you cannot you're not allowed to redeem it. Right, with the Bukhar it says you're not allowed to redeem it. And v'nim kar tam chai ubalmum chai v'shochut, right? And as we said, you can be sold as an unblemished animal while it's alive, ubalmum chai v'shochut. And if it's got a blemish, then alive or shechted, either one. B'ma'aser ne'emar lo yigo'el, when it comes to ma'aser, it says do not redeem it. V'in v'nim kar lo chai v'lo shochut, lo tam v'lo balmum, hobi b'chor, bilvat. So what's that question? Hobi b'chor bilvad, i.e. that b'chor is what seems like that is momen ba'alim. That is what that's what actually belongs to the owner, and therefore the implication seems to be that we're excluding kodshim kalim other than b'chor, right? I.e. b'chor seems to be the only part that is considered to be Momon Ba'alim. But the Gemara basically concludes from here, Kasha. Okay? The Kasha over here is on Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion. Sorry, not Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Ravina, right? Ravina, we had this whole... we've basically had two different ways of reading specifying of what Rabbi Yossi Haglili is talking about. Rabbi Yossi Haglili had this general statement saying that kodshim kalim are considered to be momon ba'alim, are considered to be the property of the owner. Then we had all these two different versions of what he was referring to, and Ravina then basically flipped that on its head. So the Gemara now over here concludes Kasha, not so happy with Ravina's reading of it, and again presumably we come back to the original reading of it and have again these two different ways of seeing Rabbi Yossi Haglili's Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion of kodshim kalim being money that belongs to the property of the owner itself. Okay, this is all of this, right? All of this from the more or less the top of Yud Bet Amud Bet, yeah, almost the top of Yud Bet Amud Bet, has been trying to understand, has been basically our suggestion that Rabbi Yossi that this is the meaning of our Mishnah when the Mishnah says Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila, right? That Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila, i.e., property that is not subject to Me'ila payment, is specifically when it's not subject to Me'ila payment, i.e., there are some things which are holy, but they belong to the owner, and that's what Rabbi Yossi clearly suggested. Kochim kalim, and within that we had this whole debate, right? Are we talking about bechor? Are we talking about maaser behema? Right? Is it a smaller category than we originally thought? But all of that was one big opinion as to what the Mishnah means. Now. Big changeover. Right now we're going to swap over and we're going to just suggest a total new way of reading that line in the Mishnah, right? All of this has been reading that line in the Mishnah, Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila, and now we're going to go on to Rava's opinion on how we read that line, Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila. Okay, so we're just below halfway down on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. First word on the line, Rava. Rava Omar. Rava says as follows: My nechasim she'en bahem me'ila. What exactly does the Mishnah refer to when it says that, or why is the Mishnah telling me that nechasim she'en bahem din me'ila? Right, i.e., property that doesn't have this specific that it's not subject to that from a judgment perspective. Umay nihu. What does that mean? Dehedyot. Right, i.e., they belong to. Regular person, right? Belongs to meaning even less, right? So in a sense, he's rejecting this opinion. He's basically saying Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila means anything which is which doesn't belong to which isn't kodshim kalim. It's not any type of kodshim. It's not not holy in any sense. It's just, you know, as we read it the first time, in a sense, just means anything which is regular, right? Which is regular animal. Owned by a regular person, that's Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila. But listen to the Hedyot. So we say, okay, great, if that's Rava's opinion, so why doesn't the Mishnah just say that? The Mishnah should have said Nechosim Dehedyot. Don't say Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila. That's why we had this whole... that's why we went through this, because we were trying to infer from the language of the Mishnah that the Mishnah sort of didn't just say Nechosim Dehedyot, the property of any Joshmo, it says, and Nechosim She'en Bahem Me'ila, sort of implying that there was something more specific there. For Kasha, the Gemara leaves that off as with the question. Doesn't have an answer to that. It's a good question. Rava's opinion is more general, but linguistically doesn't add up entirely, right? Or sort of seems to be missing something. Okay? Or we leave it as a sort of a difficulty. Alright. Omar Rabbi Abba. This is really a new sugya, actually. That's the truth. So I'm wondering if we should leave it for next time. We can get it started. Oh, there you go. Very important person. One second. Let's pause this.
Torah
uses two different words for redeem. Tifdeh and Yigael. I think that was what the Gemara was.
I didn't think it was questioning the difference of words. It was just.
Well, it was talking about what's permitted and what's not permitted, right? Here, I'll give you. So over here, we say here. Lo tifteh kodeshim v'kavonos haposuk she'in lifdosa ulahutzia l'chulin. You shouldn't do it. V'yimkar be'itlis b'shuk uv'mishkal kebasar chulin. Ach lo ne'emar lo yimocher. Yes, it doesn't say lo yimocher. Lo yigael is linked to lo yimocher, right? It shouldn't be sold. So I think what we're understanding from here is lo yigael is more, yeah, is stricter. It shouldn't be sold at all. Whereas over here it's lo sifdeh, meaning she'en lifdoso lo tzir l'chulin. It shouldn't be sold. It shouldn't be. Yes, there's definitely a difference. I think that's exactly what the Gemara's picking up on. I thought it's also interesting. This is what I thought the Gemara was. I thought this is what people would discuss. Actually, is there's also a slight difference in the tense, right? The difference between lo sivdeh and lo yigael is one is in a sense you shouldn't do it, whereas the other one is it should not be done. It's slightly different. Like yigael is like the a passive almost, right? It's done to it. Lo yigael. I definitely think that is the distinction the Gemara is drawing, but I'm not sure exactly. I still haven't got exactly how. I think we need to look up the verses. Meaning the verse. So one's in. Chukas, I think. Bechor is in Chukas. And the other one. Oh gosh, I don't know. Achrimos Kedoshim. Emor. That's where it should be. Let's pause the recording. We'll look up the. Okay, so we looked up the psukim. I'm not sure there is. I haven't figured out a difference between Yigael and Tifdeh, and we'll have to look it up. We'll end there for now, and we'll be back. So we're now towards the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and we'll pick up there 2 weeks' time.